1-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
Welcome back once again to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Here I am. great to have you along once again. Thanks for being here. Another January podcast as we inch closer and closer to pitchers and catchers reporting. You know, it's right around the corner, and I can't wait. So coming up in this podcast, Aaron Goldsmith is going to be by. We haven't talked with him on the podcast in a long time. It's going to be a wide-ranging and long conversation, but a good one. That's coming up. We'll also hear from Seth Smith. We talked about him quite a bit in the last podcast, so we'll hear from Seth Smith as he was on the Hot Stove Show. So that's coming up as well. Before we get to both of those, though, a tip of the cap to a couple of former Mariners. I thought we'd start there. One of them, who's just retiring from Major League Baseball, though he hasn't pitched since 2011, one of my favorites to wear a Mariners uniform on the mound, Arthur Lee Rhodes. Had a couple of different tours with the M's, 2000 to 2003, also came back in 2008. From the left side, intimidating and dominant, and one of the best years a pitcher has had, especially a bullpen pitcher, in Mariners history out of the pen in 2001. Of course, that historic season, but he was absolutely unbelievable. 8-0, a 1.72 ERA, pitched in 71 games that year, 68 innings, and was just masterful. 45 hits, or 46 hits in those 68 innings, 13 earned runs, 12 walks, fanned 83 in those 68 innings. A whip of 0.853. It was unbelievable. We've talked so much about the bullpen last year. The Mariners had their best season as a bullpen in their history, but I don't think you can beat, if you're talking about just the setup guys and closer, I don't think you can beat what happened in 2001 when you had, you know, Jeff Nelson from the right side, you had Kazuhiro Sasaki as a closer, and you had Arthur Rhodes setting up from the left side. Those three, just game after game after game, would just put them away. I mean, Rhodes at his 1.72 ERA. Nelson that year, a 2.76. He pitched in 69 games through 65 and a third innings. And Sasaki, 45 saves in 66 and two-thirds innings. He had a 3.24 ERA. But those three, so many wins, and they were there to close out so many different victories. Pretty amazing. So Arthur Lee Rhodes officially retired from Major League Baseball. And what's funny, he, you know, lefty, he spent a long time in the game, came up in 91 with Baltimore, retired in 2011 at the age of 41 with the Cardinals. He pitched for Baltimore, Seattle, Cincinnati, Philadelphia, St. Louis, Oakland, Texas, Cleveland, and the Florida Marlins. Was an all-star too, which I thought was great. In 2010, as a 40-year-old, was an all-star for the first time. But he actually pitched the most games with the Mariners. 312 games with the M's. Baltimore, who he spent 9 years with, 238, but he was a starter for a lot of that time. And it's, you know, it's really one of these remarkable careers where, especially early on in Baltimore, he was a starter, coming out of the pen at times, but primarily a starter to begin his career, and then kind of a swingman starter out of the bullpen, you know, in his mid-20s and the mid-90s with Baltimore, and then found himself really with the Mariners out of the pen, found his home, and then carved out a nice, long tremendous career. That's a long time in the big leagues, 20 years in the majors, and, oh, man, a lot of good memories with the Mariners. So Arthur Rhodes, retiring. And the other tip of the cap, Jamie Moyer, who's going to go to the Seattle Mariners Hall of Fame.
Here's the windup by Jamie Moyer in the first pitch. There go the flash bulbs. It's in there for a strike, and we are underway at Safeco Field. Everybody got a great shot of the first pitch. The pitch has been tossed out of the ball game, and that ball will be a souvenir in the Seattle Mariners Museum. Jamie Moyer, 8-5 on the year. Oh, and won the count on leadoff batter Kelby Overis. Next pitch.
There it was, Jamie Moyer, and we're gonna have so much more on Moyer as we move closer to that date. But tremendous all-star, of course, and similar to Arthur Rhodes, where, you know, he didn't find himself until later in his career. I mean, it's really remarkable when you look at his stops, you know, with Chicago and Baltimore and Texas and St. Louis, trying to find himself. And it was really with the Mariners in the mid-90s, 96, his age 33 season after coming over in a trade from Boston. He really found himself. And he strung together some really great seasons as the head of the Mariners staff, including an all-star season in 2003, spending really the bulk of his career, his Major League Baseball career, which was a long one, in a Mariners uniform, 11 years. He pitched for the M's, Philadelphia, Chicago, Baltimore, Texas, Colorado, St. Louis, and Boston. But 11 years in a Mariners uniform, a sub-4 ERA, 145-87 record, pitched over 2,000 innings. And the way he did it was just awesome when you watched him just befuddle some of the best hitters in the ball games as he went slow, slower, slowest. When he was in a jam, instead of trying to rear back and throw as hard as he could, he takes them off. That tremendous changeup that continued to keep hitters off balance. That was Jamie Moyer in a nutshell. And again, we'll talk a lot about him as we move closer to him getting inducted into the Mariners Hall of Fame. So congratulations there. Congratulations, Arthur Rhodes. So we haven't had a chance to catch up with Aaron Goldsmith in a while. So here it is. He's back.
To the sixth, all even at two, and for the play-by-play, here's Aaron.
They're booing me, Rick.
Not you.
That was right on cue.
If they knew you, they would never boo you, buddy.
1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Oh, did he get tied up? That was dirty from Felix.
Picks up the dirties, washes them, and brings them back fresh.
And we got Aaron Goldsmith here, hair just glistening in the sunlight, so it's pretty distracting.
I'm a happily married man with a child on the way, and I love King Perry. That is me in a nutshell, and I talk about the Mariners on the radio every night, so
kind of let it eat.
Oh, breaking news, the bees are still there. You look up above the mound, and it looks like you're staring up to the mothership, like you could be beamed up at any moment. That white roof with all the circles and the scaffolding.
Way out of here to right field! Thank you very much!
Yes, there it is. So we get a chance to welcome back Aaron Goldsmith. Once again, it's been a long time. Man, I love your open. I love having you on the podcast, but I love your open too.
I'm hoping, G-Man, that when I call you, that is the ringtone. And yeah, that's why it always goes to voicemail, because you're just letting it play out.
I can't tell you how many times this winter I've just been sitting around on my computer and I just flip on your open just to hear it, just to listen to myself once in a while. Man. Good.
Well, I'm expecting by the All-Star break this season, I'm expecting an enhanced, renewed open.
Oh yeah, you're gonna.
I think it's only fair.
You'll have 7, 8, 9 opens as we move through the course of this year.
I'd like them to be longer, more in the frame of 3 to 4 minutes. I think it's only fitting.
That one's about a full minute, so yeah, we can tack on a couple more. How you doing?
Well, G-Man, it's good to be back with you. I know it was tough to track down your people to get me back on the podcast. I know you've been calling every basketball game under the sun in the Seattle area. So, and this is nice. This is very nice to be back on the cast with you. So thank you.
Yeah, you've been all over the United States of America, too, here and there.
I'm in a hotel room in Boulder right now, and so, you know, it's like I've got no excuse not to come on.
And congratulations, you know, in your open you say child on the way, but the child has arrived. So congratulations. It's been a big off season for you.
Thank you.
Off the field as well.
Thank you. Yeah, a little baby boy, Goldsmith. We're, my wife Heather and I are thrilled. He's, at the time of this recording, he's about seven weeks and 3 days. He was born week 13 in the NFL, and it happened to be my best fantasy week of the season, for what it's worth.
Because you're
I set my roster Saturday night when I went to bed, because I thought, you know, I think there's a chance that Sunday morning I just might be a little tied up, and sure enough. So that was my first wise parenting move right there.
Awesome.
But he's awesome. It's, as you know, Gary, with two of your own and many listeners, I'm sure, as well, who have kids, it's, my goodness, it's the greatest thing in the entire world. So it's tough being away. I know you're away a lot, too. Being on the road is even harder now, but it makes coming home even better.
No, it's fantastic. Boy, it's hard to believe, too. We look at the calendar. It's the end of January. Fan Fest is coming up. We'll talk about that here in a few minutes. But, you know, pitchers and catchers right around the corner. So how about just your big picture? It's been a busy offseason for the M's. Nelson Cruz, a right field Hap. There's been a lot of changes. What's your view of what's going on this offseason with the M's?
Obviously, I've thought about it a lot, as you have. And I think at this point, we all know Cruz was the splash.
Yeah.
Last year, Cano, Rodney in the mix too as well, the cherry on top. But this year, Boomstick. But there's nothing I can say that hasn't already been said about why adding Cruz makes the Mariners better. I think in a lot of ways it's very obvious even to just the casual fan. But to me, the thing that when I really sat down and kind of have thought about the Mariners in 2015, this is going to come across as a slight maybe to Mariners teams of yesteryear. It's not meant to be in that way. But when you look at what the Mariners have now with Seager, Seager is legit, right? I mean, we knew Seager was legit. He's got the hardware to back it up. He's got the contract to back it up. Seager is legit. You know what Cano is. Felix is in his prime. So is Cano. Now you got Cruz. You've got the guy who led all of baseball in saves last year. You've got the best bullpen in baseball, almost completely intact and coming back. I mean, Gary, this is a real baseball team.
Yeah.
This is an honest to goodness team that goes into spring training. If it stays healthy, you know, forget the wild card. And this is a team that should compete from opening day on with the Angels, and if you want to throw the Rangers and the A's in there too, especially the A's, for the West. I mean, there's no question. This is an honest to goodness baseball team. Sure, there's some holes you can find. I think that's true of any team.
Yep.
Especially this time of year. There's no question about that. But I'm excited because, you write out the lineup card and you take a look at the bullpen, you look at the rotation, and my goodness, Seattle, you got a baseball team. I mean, yeah. Which is – and we were – don't you think, Gary, last year at this time we were starting to say that too with Cano and with Rodney and so forth and so on. But it's even more so now because of guys who have made the – next step. We've seen Zunino in a full year. Seager continues to get better. I mean, you kind of know that Seager is just going to continue to climb. Same for Zunino. I just, to me, that's the biggest takeaway from this offseason is that put the Mariners up against anybody. I mean, I don't care. This is a team that can compete 7 days a week with anybody. And that's absolutely thrilling. I can't wait.
Yeah,
what do you think?
I think you're right. And that's, to me, that's the biggest part of it, too. They have so many guys that are just still rising. Have you mentioned Seager one? I think Zunino's only going to get better and better, and already defensively, he's tremendous. I'm optimistic that we're going to see the same Ackley that we saw for a lot of last year. I like what they did in right field. I think that has real potential to be productive offensively with Ruggiano and Smith. And, of course, I mean, the rotation, the bullpen, they look as solid as can be. And I think it's interesting when you compare them to the other teams in the division because, I mean, the A's, man, it's hard to know exactly what you're getting with the A's, but I know Donaldson loss, I think, is going to be big time for them. The Angels, you know, they subtract Kendrick, and I think that's going to be a big loss. Their rotation is aging. There's some questions to me about the Angels. The Rangers, there's no guarantee on a bounce back. I think Houston's gotten better too. It's a really interesting division when you break it down team by team.
I totally agree because there's every team has a lot of question marks. Houston, to me, is a team I'm suddenly really excited to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, Gattis is a guy that I love seeing him just turn the handle of a baseball bat into sawdust.
Yeah.
What
did you say about him last year? I remember the comment when he was in the batter's box. It was so funny and so true, but I can't remember what it was.
He grips it like
that
a caveman.
Okay, yeah, that's what it was. It was the perfect.
That's when I envision a caveman swinging a baseball bat. I envision Evan Gattis.
And talking about an American League player, I mean, that's a fit for him coming over.
Absolutely. Colby Rasmus is a guy that I really kind of was looking at the Mariners maybe going after as a prime bounce back guy. Plays great in the outfield, has some pop. Just got completely benched by Toronto in September. So, I mean, that's a huge win, a huge plus for Houston. But, you know, you brought up Howie Kendrick. That's a name. I think Howie Kendrick has gotten, for his career, has gotten so overlooked offensively and defensively. Kendrick, out of any player in the American League West, was as capable as of any of carrying his team for a month at a time. I mean, it seemed like every year Kendrick just got white hot for a month, 5 weeks. The numbers overall bared out to be very good as well. But that's a guy who was like always seemed to have good enough numbers to be a major cog in the wheel, but never quite had good enough numbers to become an all-star every single year. So that's a huge loss for the Angels, I think. And to your point, they are aging, with the exception of Trout. How will Garrett Richards be? Now, the A's, they've traded four All-Stars.
I know. That is hard to believe.
And
how many teams have done
and
that?
Samardzija, the return on that did not seem very good, at least on paper. Norris, I think, is a huge loss. I know Moss had a horrific last couple of months. Eight free agents for the A's. Most of them have gone elsewhere. Now, some of those free agents are more valuable than others. Lowry, I think, was a big part of what they did, now helping Houston. I mean, they've nine deals, 27 players, like nine different teams, I think. it's pretty remarkable. Pretty remarkable what Billy Beane has done. But I think the Mariners are in as good of shape as of any team in the West. And among those in very good shape in the American League. To me, I'm interested in your thoughts on this, Gary. And to me, when you look at the rotation, all right, Felix, I'm writing this down, Felix, Kuma, Paxton, right?
Yep.
We know Elias is there. We know Jay Happ is obviously in the mix with Sando gone, which is – well, that was kind of a bummer, I think, everybody to see Saunders leave, but he's just such a good guy, every fan favorite. But good piece to put in the back of the rotation. To me, the biggest question mark for the Mariners in 2015 is Taijuan Walker. If Taijuan Walker is roughly the Taijuan Walker that we saw in Toronto, and maybe even roughly as too broad, I mean, he was just filthy that night, those eight brilliant innings against Mark Burley. But if Taijuan is a guy who you can count on to go out there and have quality start night after night, all of a sudden this rotation becomes just unworldly. If Taijuan has the control problems and is ping-ponging back and forth, now that rotation is still very, very, very good, but it's slightly more human. What do you think?
You know, I think if you put 100 people in a room and you had them write down their predictions for what guys on the Mariners are going to do this season, I think you'd get the most I think it would fluctuate the most with Taijuan Walker. Anything in between, you know, Cy Young-type numbers because he has that kind of arm and, you know, a guy that's spending most of the season in AAA. I think you're right in pinpointing he's kind of the wild card of this rotation. I'm a big fan of Jay Happ, and I think he's going to fit in to Safeco Field really well. Elias, you think would only get better. I love the idea of having six starters come into the season, especially after last season where it looked like they ran out of starters by the time the end of the season
right.
rolled around. But my expectations for Walker are still pretty high, and you pinpointed that start. I mean, that – Man, that Toronto start was unbelievable. He just mowed through that lineup, and we've talked about his potential. We've seen his potential, but just to see it flash like that, to see him put it all together like that, I mean, because I feel like Paxton's already kind of arrived. Iwakuma's there. Felix is there. Boy, you had an arm like that on a regular basis, watch out. I mean, that is a really deep and really good rotation. And then Elias or Hap is a five. I mean, that's – or a four or five. That's good stuff. That is a deep, solid rotation.
I think the Mariners go into 2015 with their top three starters. Legitimately, each one of those guys has a chance to be an all-star. Felix, you're right in ink that's going to happen. Kumo, we know, has been an all-star. Paxton, well, we've seen it. We know what Lloyd feels about him. Lloyd said a number of times he's a future ace. But, I mean, how many other teams, maybe the Nationals, but
Nationals.
How many other teams go into spring training where I wouldn't be shocked at all if all three of those guys put up all-star numbers in the first half? I mean, if they do what we know they can do, they will. It's that simple.
Yeah, they got a chance to be the best rotation in the American League. I mean, that Nationals rotation is pretty sick. When you talk about what Fister's going to be your five, I mean, that's pretty good. But no, in terms of American League, that's as good as good. I mean, you have the defending Cy Young Award winner at the top of the rotation. But right?
I don't know if you did you not. Oh, this is awkward. You didn't hear. You didn't in here. Oh no. Were you just have you taken like 5 months off Twitter?
No. I thought everyone was kidding. I thought that was a joke.
Kluber thought that they were kidding.
Oh man. I haven't had a chance to really talk about that on the podcast yet. I've kind of been waiting for you to dive into this. And you know, nothing against Corey Kluber, because he really had a great season. And in another year, I could have seen him winning the Cy Young Award, but man, I just feel like voters they overanalyzed it just a little bit. That's what how I feel it came down, because I think you sliced the numbers in so many different ways, and boy, it's hard to imagine. And granted, I get to watch him every single time he pitches, but boy, it's still hard for me to believe that Felix didn't win the Cy Young Award.
Well, I definitely echo your comments about Kluber. Not only is he a magnificent pitcher, he's a terrific guy. Had the chance to interview him in Cleveland. Couldn't have been any nicer. And this is somebody who really, coming up through the minors, wasn't really ever talked about much at all, even though he was a complete strikeout artist. I was in the Texas League when he was in the Texas League pitching and for the Padres AA Club, and he just struck everybody out. But he never was talked about as a prospect, and here he is now winning the Cy Young. So I'm right there with you on all the good things you say about Kluber. But to me, kind of what you were saying, it is maddening to no end. Now, hey, listen, we all like the advanced stats. They serve a role. I think, Gary, you've said it a number of times, and I think you hit it on the head by saying the advanced stats serve a purpose, but they can't be taken in a vacuum. I mean, they have to – Everything's balanced, right? I mean,
right.
There's no one stat that is a definitive stat about something, I think. And I think you agree, you're along the same
line.
Oh,
absolutely. I think there is no one stat that the whole thing tells a story. You take
right.
many different
stats. All the evidence, put it together, shake and bake it, baby.
Right,
you shake it all up and see what you come out with.
Yep.
To me, it is so maddening when you look at, of course, the results are made public, to which writers order for which player. And as you and I have talked about privately, there was at least one writer for every non-Seattle American League West team that voted for Kluber.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. There was a voter for the A's who voted for Corey Kluber. A writer for the A's, I should say, who voted for Corey Kluber. And if you look at the one start that Kluber made against Oakland, he did not get out of the fourth inning. He got 3 1/3 innings deep, 8 hits, 5 earned. The strikeout master struck out only 2. He gave up a Yahtzee ball. I mean, he was done. He was donezo. He couldn't get out of the fourth inning. And they, that same writer, you'd have to think, was there for all the games that Felix started against the A's, a team that he has seen for how many years now?
I know.
Felix made six starts against Oakland this year. He pitched at least eight innings in half of the starts. He went seven innings twice. He went six and a third. That was the poor start. I mean, the most runs that Felix gave up, earned runs, was three in those six starts. It's just, and you know, you can take the same comment. It's not even worth spending the time team by team by team. You can take the same comment virtually for the Astros, for the Angels, and for the Rangers when you compare Kluber and Felix. And it's good to get back to the point. As my anger is taking me off course, you know, it's like just watch the game. Just watch the game. I feel like some of these writers go straight to all this advanced stuff, and they blame Zunino's great framing for Felix getting strikes and the Mariners being good. And the writer for the Rangers, who I actually really like, I think he's a smart guy and a good guy, who voted for Kluber, said, after I saw the Indians' defense, I was shocked that Kluber could get even one out. Come on.
Yeah, that's...
I get it. But Felix's numbers are so dominant. That wasn't just because of the Mariners' defense. And I think we can all agree the Mariners' defense was good, but that doesn't mean there weren't holes in it.
Right. That's exactly right. That's why I always come back to it, because I've talked about this too during the years. I'm just not fully on board with defensive metrics at this point, because I just, you know, they're useful, but I feel like a lot of the Cy Young vote was decided on defensive metrics, and I still feel like there's too much error there, and they're just not as pure as some of the other numbers. And you look at it, and Felix really had an historic season when you talk about the WHIP, and you know, there's an American League pitcher hasn't done what he did since Pedro Martinez, and we're talking about a Hall of Famer. I mean, hits per nine innings, led the league at 6.5, led the league in starts, led the league in ERA at 2.14. You know, they were watching his innings closely, and he still pitched 236. You know, I mean, he's a horse.
And this is something that Kyle Seager brought up in casual conversation one day. In the first half of the season, when Seager was, we were talking about the Cy Young, and we're just talking baseball, not doing an actual interview, and he was adamant that Felix was going to win the Cy Young, and I agreed at that point. Felix was cruising, and the point that Seager made is that, hey, Felix is doing this for his 10th straight year. I know it's a 1 year award. But when you're putting up numbers like that in the same division, now spanning a decade, hey, the book is out, man. The book is out on Felix. And even though, and I know you've heard this, Gary, even though the book is out on Felix, you go locker to locker in that A's clubhouse, and you ask them what that
done.
Pitch is.
Yeah.
Ask them.
I know.
So I tell you, about 60-40. 60 will call a changeup. And 40% will call a splitter. Bob Melvin calls it a splitter, and then he says, or whatever that pitch is.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, how many times has Melvin stood with the knee up on the steps, leaning on the rail, and just shaking his head because Felix is just shoving it against the A's with whatever that thing is? I don't know. To me, that's part of it, man. It has to be. You can't tell. I mean, I get that it's an award for this year, but for Felix to put up those numbers when the book is out against teams in the division that he just dominates by and large. Okay, congrats to Kluber. I can honestly say there aren't many nicer guys than Corey Kluber, so kudos to him. But yeah, here's what I find just fascinating: the full circle of baseball. We've talked about the. At great length, the record that Felix broke of Tom Seaver, 14 and going 16 games of at least seven innings, two runs or fewer. So when Seaver did it, it's obviously the first time it had ever happened. That was in 1971. He finished second in the Cy Young to Fergie Jenkins, who's now in Cooperstown, of course. So apparently, if there's a historic streak that you want to snap, if it's that one, the 7-2, don't expect to win the Cy Young because Seaver and Felix both came in second place. And Seaver's numbers, when he did it, were even better than Felix's. In his 13 games, Seaver had a sub-1 ERA. And in his final 9 starts of those 13 starts, he went at least 9 innings. He had a 10-inning start against San Diego. He struck out 14 and was dealt a loss.
Huh.
So I found that. I thought, I wonder if Seaver won the Cy Young in that year. And sure enough, he did not. But it's I'm like you. I've had this pin up for a while, as I'm sure all the listeners can tell at this point. It's a lot of venom and rambling on my end, which I apologize for. But I'm sure everybody listening kind of feels the same way. They must if they're listening to this podcast. It was just man, that was a kick in the gut. There's no other way to put it.
Well, if it gives them more motivation for next year, though, watch out, American League. That's all.
Yeah,
he's
scared.
I know. So before you go, are you going to be at FanFest this weekend?
I will most certainly be a fan fest. We've got everybody coming to town. Fernando Rodney is going to be there.
Nice.
Which I was very surprised by.
Hopefully
there will be a
photo,
the photo section set up where you can get your picture taken Fernandoing,
nice.
shooting the arrow. But yeah, they got Cruz. We got Jay Happ. We got Zanino, Wilhelmsen, Furbush, Paxton. 10 guys. It's going to be great. It always is. Last year was the biggest fan fest in history. I think there's over 20,000. This year there'll be even more. Kids 14 and under free, everybody else $10. 11-4 Saturday and Sunday, Safeco Field. Tour the clubhouse, come on the field, run the bases. We got the dugout dialogues going. Hot Soap Show will be going on Saturday noon to 2 along the concourse, so swing by and say hi.
Nice.
I'm fired up. This is going to be great. This is going to be a great Mariners season. Spring training, pitchers and catchers coming up in like a month.
Oh,
so this is happening, G-Man. It's happening.
This visit went fast, but I know we will visit very soon and very often. So I feel like this is kind of the discussion with you here. I feel like this is kind of the official podcast kickoff to the new year. So thank you for that.
Well, thanks for having me, G-Man. This has been good.
Yep. Talk to you soon.
You got it, bud.
Love it. I hadn't had a chance to talk baseball with Aaron in a while, so there it is. He'll be on again very, very soon. Now we're going to hand things over to the Hot Stove Show. They had a chance to talk to Seth Smith, Mariners right fielder. Here's the conversation.
Rick Riz along with Shannon Dreyer and Bill Krueger. It's great to have you on this ball club after spending last season as a Padre. Before that, a couple of years with the A's, as the fans know, and also as a Colorado Rocky. What did you think when you first heard about the trade coming over from San Diego, Seth?
I was excited. I didn't really want to leave San Diego, but I was actually excited about all the trades they were making until I realized I was the one that was probably going to get squeezed out. So once it became kind of obvious that I was going to be traded, I knew there were a few teams out there that were interested. You never know what's going to happen, but Seattle was one that I was kind of hoping would be able to make the deal, and it happened, and we're definitely excited about it.
Seth, you spent some time in the AL West a couple of years ago. What do you remember of Seattle? What do you remember of the Mariners?
I remember they were always a team that we didn't particularly like playing. We felt like, we didn't really feel like, we didn't verbalize it or anything like that, but we all knew that they gave us problems and that they would always play a good game against us. I don't know what the record was or anything, but they're definitely a team that we had a lot of respect for, and knew they had some good players and knew that if we were going to beat them, we would have to be at the top of our game.
Seth, I think for our audience, they remember you when you played for Oakland. Obviously, you had a longer career in that. You were in Colorado and then, of course, in San Diego. And maybe I know you're going to downsell a little bit, but tell us a little bit about you as a player, just sort of all aspects. I know I've seen you play. I know what kind of player you are, but our audience may need a little education.
Yeah, you guys will probably be a lot better at that than I will be. I just try to show up and do the best that I can. And that's,
that's what you're going to get. And now what that is on a given day, I don't know. I try to hit line drives. I try to run down balls in the outfield and get around a bit the bases as quickly as I can. But I try to be as good as I can. That's really I know that's cliche and all of that, but honestly, that's what it is.
I know one thing, Seth. As a left-handed hitter, you hit righties very well. Your career average, yet 277, but a very good on-base percentage, a 481 slugging percentage. That's what the Mariners are looking for. I saw an article a while back, and when you were with the Padres last year, and the quote was from you. It said, "I listened to Phil Plantier and Alonzo Powell." Alonzo, a good friend of ours, spent some time in the Mariners organization. What did you learn last year from Phil and also Alonzo?
Last year, for the first time going into spring training, I allowed myself and allowed the hitting coach to kind of, you know, tinker with my swing a little bit and try to get it to the next level. I felt like there was always more in there that I was getting out, but I was in a comfortable spot, so it was kind of a thing where, you know, do you keep doing what you're doing, which has been, you know, pretty good, or do you want to possibly take a step back to try to make yourself even better? And they made a couple of suggestions that I had kind of been mulling over during the off season, and they kind of came together. We were on the same page from day one, and we made a couple of mechanical changes that would be boring to talk about right now, but they worked. And you know, it's still a long baseball season, and you know, I had a pretty good year for me last year, and but I still had some ups and downs, and so it's a, you know, it's baseball, as anyone knows, is something that is going to be up and down, and you're just trying to be as consistent as you can, and trying to be in the best place you can every day for the game.
How extreme were those changes?
They were actually, you know, they feel extreme, but they're real minor. It's really, you know, maybe a thing with your timing and really kind of just where my hand started is what it started with. And then you make some other adjustments as the season goes along with your approach. And then when you feel comfortable with it, you can start talking about what the pitcher's trying to do and things like that. So it's things that you, when you're feeling them, they feel big, but really they're just a couple small things.
So it was a progression for you throughout the season, adjusting to that, it sounds like?
Yeah, well, no more so than any season. Regardless of how your swing is or what your swing is, for most of us anyway, there are some exceptions. You know, your whole season you're trying to find your A swing, and it's a daily battle to try to find it. And you know, when you get locked in and you're hot, you know, as soon as you get to the ballpark, you've got it. But some days when you're not as locked in, you know, you're all BP, and then even before the game, you're searching for it. So it's, regardless of your swing, it's always a thing that you're working with the whole season.
Seth, a lot of players, I mean, come in with high allocates. You know, you get drafted and you're going to be a star player, and you come to the big leagues, and listen, your body of work is excellent, but you get to the big leagues, you're not necessarily going to get 600 at bats and play every single day. I mean, what's allowed you to become so consistent, considering the fact that you've never really been handed that many at bats in one season?
Yeah, I could be. You know, when I first got to the league with the Rockies, I was a bench player, so I had to learn how to, if I wanted to play at all, be successful in a small amount of opportunities, and so I kind of ran with that and took it for what it was. You know, you can be upset about it or complain about it, or you can just kind of own it and it is what it is and attack it that way. And that's what I chose to do, is just kind of whatever they tell me to do today, I'm going to go out there and try to do it the best I can. And that's kind of the mentality I've taken throughout my career. Show up ready to play. If you're in the lineup, you know, go at it for four at bats or nine innings or five at bats. And if you're not, get ready for that pinch hit late in the game that can make a difference. So it's really just being prepared and for whatever you're asked to do.
Visiting with Mariners outfielder Seth Smith. Seth, I don't know if you faced Felix last year. We only played the Padres a handful of ball games, but I'm sure you had to prior to that with Oakland. What's it like facing Felix Hernandez?
it's not fun. I never enjoyed it. He's unique in that you never know what's coming. Regardless of the count, he can throw anything in any count. He's one of the few guys that, you know, he can pitch. He pitches really well. He can hit, you know, spots whenever he wants to and that kind of thing. But he's one of the few guys that doesn't really have to. So if he wants to just challenge you or just throw his changeup wherever, whenever he can. And he's one of the few guys that literally can do, you know, whatever he wants on the mound.
Seth, when you were talking about being ready for anything a second ago, I imagine that you learned a little bit of that in college and a previous life and a previous sport, back up to Eli Manning at Mississippi. I'm dying to know, did you watch the game last night?
Oh, yeah, the NCAA game, I did. My wife would tell you that I watch a lot of football. I don't think I watch that much, but I definitely enjoy the game. It's actually still my favorite sport. I just happen to be better at baseball, and you know those guys in the, not that I could play there, obviously, but watching college and football players hit each other nowadays is a little bit intimidating. So I'm glad I was a little bit better at baseball and chose this route.
So I think it's terrific that you were a two-sport guy, and I think it's good for our audience and particularly our kids out there to know that it isn't always about just playing one all year round. The fact is, there's a lot of guys that make the big leagues. They were pretty well-rounded athletes. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's a great point you make. That's one of my my pet peeves is I played four sports in high school and two sports in college, and I honestly believe that that's a huge reason that I am where I am today. Just the different views you get from the different coaches you get to interact with, the different teammates you get in different sports, and just the different aspects of athleticism, sports, maturity, you know, becoming a man that you get from the different sports. They each teach you something different. And like I said, the amount of coaches you're able to run into that can have an impact in your life, is huge when you allow yourself not to specialize too early. And honestly, I think I would have just got burned out if I, from an early age, just played one sport and tried to grind it out, especially a game like baseball that's so hard and taxing both mentally and physically. It's just I'm thankful that I was given the opportunity to play multiple sports growing up, and I definitely feel like it's helped get me to where I am today.
Seth, you still back there in Mississippi?
I am. I come back in the off season and come back down south. Both of our families are here, so it's a good time to enjoy friends and family and unwind for a little bit.
Smith-Wills Stadium, is it still there in Jackson? That was my first year in baseball, 1975. We went there, and the Mets had their double-A team there. Is that still there, that ballpark?
It is. It's kind of a multi-purpose field. They play some football games and soccer games and still some baseball games. They have a brand new, or I guess it's probably might be close to 10 years old now, the Mississippi Braves double-A team is kind of right down the road from Smith-Wills Stadium. So, but it's still there, and they still use it.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, Seth, we're happy that you're going to call Seattle home. Welcome to the Seattle Mariners organization, buddy, and we'll see you here in a few weeks. All right.
We're definitely excited about it.
All right, Seth. Happy New Year, buddy, and we'll see you in a few weeks at spring training. Mariners outfielder Seth Smith.
And that's going to do it. I think we're going to have another one coming back at you tomorrow. We're going to talk some Fan Fest. Fan Fest is this weekend at Safeco Field. It's going to be fantastic. Aaron talked a little bit about it, but we're going to dive more into it tomorrow with Mandy Lincoln. And if you haven't been there, you should check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be fantastic. A lot of optimism, obviously, for this season. Looking forward to it, and hopefully see you out there this weekend. Thanks a lot. Talk to you tomorrow.